Let's see if there can ever really be one China. I don't know if this is becoming an unpopular opinion or something, but I'm strongly pro Taiwan independence purely on the fact that the people of Taiwan have built a pretty great society for themselves and seem to like it. And I'm pretty much anti-military intervention anywhere, whether it be by the US and Iran, whether it be a Russia and Ukraine, or whether it be a China and Taiwan. That's where I stand. So before I watch this video, I just want you to know that's where I stand. That's probably what I'm gonna filter that lens through. But I'm interested to see maybe other takes or whatever this is about.
Take a look at Taiwan's passport covers through the years. Okay. You'll notice that in the first few iterations, the word Taiwan never actually appears on the passport cover.
Okay.
In fact, the word Taiwan doesn't even appear until 2003. And that's because, well, Taiwan didn't always identify itself as Taiwan. It originally identified itself as China, the Republic of China.
Yeah.
But this is also China, the People's Republic of China.
Yep.
So when did Taiwan emerge as an identity of its own on this passport? And if the People's Republic of China is insistent on the One China principle, is it even possible for Taiwan to maintain its autonomy? The story of how two Chinas emerged started in 1927 with the bloody civil war between two political parties, the Chinese Communist Party and the Chinese Nationalist Party. This war lasted over two decades. By October 1949, it's the Chinese brutal. Communist Party claimed victory, and the Nationalists retreated to the island of Taiwan, which had previously been a Japanese colony, but was handed over to China Japan surrendered.
They did team up at one point to fight the Japanese, which is a crazy quirk of history. The Civil War was happening as Japan invaded.
The end of World War II.
Beginning in December 1949, on his island sanctuary.
It was crazy.
Zhang worked toward the day when China could be freed from the communist yoke.
From 1949, 1950 onward, you have two separate jurisdictions. They both claim legitimacy, so they all both claim that they are representative of China.
On the mainland, the communists declared their country the People's Republic of China. On Taiwan, the nationalists kept the name the Republic of China.
Mm-hmm. There are multiple claims of what China is, what it ought to be, and it's...
As a weeb, I assumed Japan was doing cool things and just making anime in World War II. You're correct, yeah. What Japan would do is they would invade countries and make them watch a lot of anime. That's all they did. And people didn't want to become weebs, so they resisted it. But that was the only reason. Don't look too much into it. It was a war crime.
Confused by the fact that they used the same term.
And you can see that reflected in the design of the first passport from Taiwan in 1949. The cover only says Passport of the Republic of China with no mention of Taiwan. To add some more complexity to the question of who is the real China, the ROC, not the PRC, got a seat as the founding member of the United Nations in 1945, before the Chinese Civil War had even ended. This seat went to Chiang Kai-shek, the then leader of the ROC, because he was the one who brought his army onto the side of the Allies against Japan during World War II.
Dude, there's so many photos of fucking FDR and Churchill just palling around, dude. And there's always a third person. Whether it's Stalin or Chiang Kai-shek or whatever, they're always like a little bit, they're like, you're always getting third wheeled by these two fucking hooligans. Churchill is ugly. He's ruining FDR's aura. No, he's raising it. He's like the ugly friend that makes you look hotter. FDR's not actually that hot. But compared to fucking Churchill, he mogs, dude. That's why he hangs out with him. It's a cheerleader effect.
Onto the side of the Allies against Japan during World War II.
Because the ROC was one of the Allies, it had an important role in establishing the United Nations, the basic institutions, and the UN Charter.
From 1945 to 1971, the United Nations recognized the Republic of China on Taiwan as the real China. But come the Cold War, the concept of China shifts.
Essentially, the Soviets and the PRC have a falling out, and the U.S.
the
is
Sino-Soviet
looking for
split.
An opportunity to put the Soviets in a tougher position. So one of the things that they decide to do is to move closer to the PRC.
And how the U.S. triangulated itself between the PRC and the ROC became more and more significant. Henry Kissinger, then the U.S. National Security Advisor, secretly visited China in 1971. Following his trip, President Nixon became the first U.S. president to publicly visit communist China after two decades of diplomatic isolation.
Yep. Nixon opens
during
China.
During this time, the UN passed Resolution 2758, where I recognize the PRC as the only legitimate representative of China. And with that, the ROC lost its seat at the UN.
Beijing and Washington, they get closer because they both see a common enemy in the Soviet Union. The decision to move closer to the US remained actually quite contested within the PRC. The US was seen as this sort of the leader of this sort of imperialist capitalist world. So it takes Mao dying in 1976 and also Deng Xiaoping coming to power and being able to sideline his rivals for the US and the PRC to move closer together.
I've been reading more about it. What Deng Xiaoping did to fucking the period of like 2 years after Mao's death is like the most Game of Thrones shit, dude. It's the most Game of Thrones shit in China. There's so many different groups fighting for power. What he does to fucking get out on top is crazy. And then totally radically changes China.
US-China relations.
3 years after Mao's death, the US formalized its own recognition of Beijing as the sole government in China. This birthed America's version of the One China policy.
The government of the United States of America acknowledges the Chinese position that there is but one China, and Taiwan is part of China.
All right, I know it looks like it's just me out here, but producing stories like this takes a whole team. Reporters on Next. And now, let's get back to the video. Come the 80s and 90s, the concept of China evolved as a new Taiwanese identity began to emerge, especially as our government started to democratize.
Taiwan was under martial law for 38 years. And so by the early 1990s, Taiwan had moved from what was effectively a police state to a full-fledged democracy.
A pivotal moment took place in 1995. The president of Taiwan, Li Donghui, who had been appointed by his predecessor, so not yet democratically elected, spoke at his alma mater, Cornell University.
His visit to the United States is the first by a Taiwan leader since the United States severed diplomatic relations with that country in 1979.
The administration of then-U.S. President Bill Clinton initially blocked Li's visa.
At that point in time, the U.S. was trying to still improve its ties with the PRC. It was very wary of a potential upsetting of the relationship.
But the Republican-led Senate pushed for his visit to be approved.
They went around President Clinton, who was in office at that time, and approved an unofficial visit by Li Donghui to Cornell University.
Today, the institutions of democracy are in place in the Republic of China. Human rights are respected and protected to a very high degree. Democracy is thriving in my country.
And that visit was seen as important because it raised the visibility of the ROC as Taiwan. So people in Taiwan saw that they had a degree of international recognition, that Li Donghui was well received in the United States.
It also marked a shift in the way the leaders of Taiwan viewed their claim on China as one China, but open to multiple interpretations.
We in the Republic of China
starts getting really
Taiwan,
vague from this point on.
Have found that
everyone
peaceful transformation
can't speak direct
must take place gradually and with careful planning.
Essentially, the Taiwan side, even though they kept the ROC name, accepted that, you know, their jurisdiction is limited to Taiwan Island, Penghu, Mazu, Jingmen, and other outlying islands. They essentially accept, right, the PRC as being the government on the mainland.
But Beijing saw Li's visit as a violation of their One China principle, the one in which reunification was the goal, and Taiwan was part of the People's Republic of China.
The PRC became very uncomfortable with Li Donghui's increasingly pro-Taiwan independence rhetoric. He followed Taiwan public opinion, which generally was not supportive of eventual unification with the PRC.
The PRC clearly didn't like that very much. And so what they decided to do was to launch a series of missile exercises in 95 and 96. Now, some of that was to show opposition, but a lot of it was also
I think all this stuff is like super backfire, by the way. I feel like China, if I'm a Chinese strategist, if I work for Xi Jinping, or whatever, whoever the at the time, Hu Jintao. And my goal is reunification with Taiwan. Right now, there's multiple political parties in Taiwan. And the one that's most pro-independence, anti-China, keeps winning the elections, largely because right before the elections, China fucking flies planes and puts boats around the island. And so it like, if, like all this, all the stuff super helps the Green Party, the anti-China party in Taiwan. If they didn't do all these exercises and these military drills and these threats, people would see it as not that important, and they would like the party that would want closer China ties, and then maybe China could just do it, like almost dissolve into it naturally. I mean, I think at some point there's going to be like a Hong Kong type situation. It's just wild. I just think this such a this strategy of like constantly threatening and alienating and like dragging anchors on the cables and is like it just proving the independence guys in Taiwan correct.
Scare Taiwanese voters from supporting Li Donghui, but the missile exercises had the opposite effect.
The specter of China launching missiles near Taiwan's major ports led to a sort of rally around the flag effect where Li Donghui became more popular was before. And in 1996, of course, there was the first direct presidential election. Li Donghui ran in and won that election.
From there, Taiwan's position veered further from the one China that the PRC envisioned. By 2000, the people of Taiwan elected Chen Shui-bian, their first president from the Democratic Progressive Party, a new party whose charter included aspirations for independence.
It's not necessarily a declaration of independence.
It's not pre-watch, bro. I got a video about the Taiwan elections that I made in like January of 24 that literally says the same thing. That's one of our better videos. We deeply, like, Stefik helped a lot. We researched that one. And then we had people from Taiwan doing reactions to it where they thought that was the basic level of knowledge that all Americans had about their politics. And they were so impressed. They were like, wow, I didn't know Americans knew so much about our politics. And I was like, bro, they don't. They fucking don't.
But it was there because of the sort of coalition that they had to build.
This marked a significant change since Lee's Cornell speech that still identified his country as the Republic of China on Taiwan.
We've now got a Taiwan today where the large majority of people in Taiwan identify as just Taiwanese. And so that then shifts the incentives of politicians running for elected office.
In 2002, President Chen pushed forward legislation to add the English word Taiwan to their passport. By 2003, the first passports with Taiwan on the cover were issued. Since then, the word Taiwan has remained on the Republic of China passport, and the text itself has gotten larger, a reflection of how design mirrors identity.
And there's a press.
Dude, by 2029, it's going to be 120 point font.
Pragmatic reason for this as well. It clarified that this was not the People's Republic of China. And as a practical matter, the Taiwan ROC passport today is actually relatively powerful.
But as the word Taiwan became more prominent alongside Taiwanese identity, so has Beijing's calls for nationalism and its One China reunification goals.
What happens is the PRC becomes the world's second largest economy. It has a lot more capabilities that it can bring to bear. So it really wants to further isolate Taiwan and bring it under its fold if possible. And so it starts trying to be more insistent on its One China principle.
So many other countries which could safely ignore Chinese objections 25 or 30 years ago are now
they can,
in a much
yeah.
more vulnerable position.
They put a lot of pressure. Any country that recognizes Taiwan or has diplomatic ties with it or whatever, they put economic pressure till they fold.
The PRC has much more leverage economically over a lot of countries.
As recently as May 2026, China removed tariffs on all African nations except for one, Eswatini, a country that still has diplomatic ties with Taiwan. As for the U.S., one of the largest trading partners of the PRC,
President Xi stressed to President Trump that the Taiwan question is the most important issue in China-U.S. relations. Talk to me about that moment when that
was
discussed.
Well, they certainly feel that way, and they always raise that issue. And we understand they raise that issue. From our perspective, any forced change in the status quo and the situation that's there now would be bad for both countries.
They do see value in the continued
So I saw Rubio say that. It's just funny because that's a fine stance to take, which is like, we just want everything to stay the same, okay? No violence, nothing. We're gonna keep the status quo. Everyone's nominally happy. whatever. But the problem is that Trump did not echo what Rubio said there. Trump came out of that meeting and was like, yeah, I think we might cancel our weapons deal to Taiwan. It's a good bargaining chip. And it's like, you already agreed to that deal with the Taiwanese government. You signed it into law on both of your sides. Like, Trump is just a horrible ally, bro. You just can't, you can't trust them. And it's just frustrating.
Self-governance of Taiwan.
Make it Taiwan, a territory of Thailand. Then nobody's happy. Okay. I like that you're almost British, how you're just getting involved and changing lines on maps. Just for maximum fuckery. I like that.
Although they, they are reluctant to do anything about Taiwan independence because they know that that's provocative.
Though Taiwan does have its own economic bargaining chip, it's home to the company TSMC, which manufactured over 90% of the world's semiconductor chips in 2024.
So Taiwan, in other words, is economically just as important to the United States as the economic relationship with the PRC.
Despite the U.S.'s reluctance to recognize Taiwan as its own country, it still hedges defensively against Beijing in the Asia-Pacific region. And the U.S. remains Taiwan's biggest weapons dealer, supplying more than 70% of its conventional arms imports.
Well, we'll see.
But the people caught in the middle of this geopolitical crossfire are the residents of Taiwan itself, especially those who were born and raised there and have no connection to the revolutionary past of the Chinese Civil War.
They felt that their futures were just given away without their consent.
Now, the PRC is not a democracy. There's no signs that it's going to become a democracy anytime soon. The idea of an independent Taiwan is still anathema to the CCP in Beijing and is probably a cause for war.
The majority of people in Taiwan just want the status quo. They are willing to live with this sort of very vague international status that they have because they don't want war.
They also don't want
PRC or CCP control over them. Now, this gets us back to the question of what is China? Should it be some political entity or can it be something that's more vague? Today, as these claims about unity and control become more important, that vagueness becomes more challenging.
So as the People's Republic of China becomes more powerful, how it enforces its version of the One China principle and where the U.S. chooses to stand?
I mean, I think we missed, they talked about TSMC for a second, but that is the big question here is that, China is rocketing forward on chip making. They're obviously not at TSMC level, but two big things are happening. One is Trump is pushing like crazy to get TSMC plants outside of Taiwan, to get them in Arizona and whatever. If that ever happens, that bargaining chip is gone because Trump doesn't seem to have any loyalty outside of that. And then on the Chinese side, they are less worried about it as their own chip manufacturing gets a lot better. You know, this is kind of being eroded from two sides, though it is a massive bargaining chip now. What if the U.S. invades Taiwan first? For what gain? For what gain, bro? 51st state? We just can't seem to pick one. We've picked so many things to be the 51st state, and yet none of them end up being. DJT needs the easy W. Yeah, you're right. He needs an easy W. Nowhere easier than Taiwan, right off China's coastline, an island that is already military fortified for a possible invasion at all times. That's the good, yes. Pick the easy one. While still having a war in Iran. It's a good strat.
Which manufactures impacts on global alliances, especially for Taiwan.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, realistically, I don't know what'll happen because I don't think China has any intention of long-term maintaining the status quo. Despite how it's been for a long time, it just feels like she wants to be the guy. Did you gauge the Taiwan question amongst youth during your China trip? I'm curious what Simmons. I asked the guys I played basketball with, they didn't care. They basically said the way it is fine. That's what they said. So it just seems like a thing that leaders want. Weren't they Zoomers? They were Zoomers. It definitely feels like a boomer thing.